Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It's Friday, September 25th, 2020. Every week, we check in with Publishers Weekly for the latest news and analysis on books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, joins me again today. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So, Andrew, John Bolton's best-selling memoir, The Room Where It Happened, has been out since June, and that was when a federal judge refused to block its publication after the Trump administration made that move. But as we have discussed, the legal case against Bolton goes on, and this week there was a bombshell filing in the case. Tell us about that, and tell us more why you think it's such an important development for authors and publishers to be watching.
Yeah, sure. So let me start with a refresher here first. So as our listeners will no doubt remember, it was back on June 20th that Judge Royce Lamberth issued an order denying the DOJ's emergency application to block publication of John Bolton's book, The Room Where It Happened, which of course means that Simon & Schuster could move ahead with its publication, which it did, and they sold a million copies. The book was a memoir of Bolton's brief time serving as national security advisor in the Trump White House. But in Royce Lamberth's decision, many observers, including me at the time, noted that Lamberth actually rebuked Bolton for opting out of the pre-publication review process. In other words, because Bolton, who had signed non-disclosure agreements, did not wait for a written clearance from the government that his book was cleared of classified information and unilaterally decided to push ahead with publication, you know, Lamberth had a problem with that. And he actually wrote that it was his opinion that Bolton, and I'll quote Lamberth here, likely jeopardized national security by disclosing classified information in violation of his non-disclosure agreements. But here's the thing, and this is a very important thing. When Lamberth made those observations on June 20th, he hadn't seen the book. So he didn't know what was in there that was classified or not classified. And Lamberth was also making those statements based on representations from Trump administration officials. And even more importantly, he had curiously not seen any statement from the career officials who had actually handled the pre-publication review of Bolton's book. And that always stood out to me as a curious omission. Even more curious, the government is now seeking summary judgment in its civil case against John Bolton, which, if they are successful, would enable the Department of Justice to seize Bolton's earnings from the book, including clawing back his $2 million advance. And ramping up the drama even more, we talked about on the show, I think it was a week ago or maybe two, the DOJ conveniently has let slip that, yeah, Bolton is also under criminal investigation for this as well. And still, the officials who conducted Bolton's pre-pub review are absent from the government's case. And now we see why. In his defense from the outset, Bolton has maintained that he was assured by government officials that his book was clear of any classified information and that he only decided to move ahead with publication of it after it became clear to him that political appointees were using the pre-publication review process to suppress his book, to block publication of a book that was going to embarrass the president. And in a bombshell letter, exactly as you say, filed with the court this week, attorneys for the National Security Council official who led the pre-publication review of Bolton's book detailed a troubling chain of events that back up Bolton's claim that indeed political appointees in the Trump administration had improperly hijacked the review process for political purposes. In a 19-page letter, Ellen Knight, who is the former senior director for records access and information security management at the NSC and also a librarian, I'll point out, from the University of Maryland, confirmed that the book was in fact clear of classified information after an intensive review process, only to be blocked by political appointees who, and this is even more galling, if not surprising, later unsuccessfully pressured Knight to change her story. And when she didn't, guess what? They removed her from her post.
And Ellen Knight has detailed that review process for Bolton's book, Andrew. Can you tell us what exactly she has revealed about what that process looks like?
Sure. So in her filing, Knight confirms what Bolton has said in his filings, that, you know, she cleared the book after a lengthy iterative process that began with the submission of the manuscript on December 30 of 2019. Now, from the start, Bolton has maintained that he didn't need to submit the book. And in fact, he was sure there was no classified material in it. Well, Ellen Knight, in her letter, rejects that contention. In fact, the draft manuscript, she says, contained voluminous amounts of classified information and, in fact, required significant effort to put it into publishable shape. But that effort, you know, it came to pass. They did the work. Knight called Bolton's review process the most intensive she's seen in recent memory at the NSC. She provided Bolton with extensive guidance, she says, best practices for writing around classified information. She held 4 in-person meetings with Bolton, lasting a total of 14 hours. She spoke with him in 10 separate telephone conversations, 2 of which, she notes, were hours long. Knight also held 3 lengthy telephone calls with Bolton's attorney, Charles Cooper, and had extensive email correspondence with the author, his attorney, and his assistant throughout the review process. And ultimately, Knight confirms, her office determined in April, Bolton has said this in his filings as well, that all classification concerns had been addressed and that the publication of the manuscript, as revised, was going to disclose no information that would cause harm to our national security. And that conclusion, attorneys for Knight added in the letter, was confirmed by a final read-through of the manuscript by the acting director for access management at the agency.
So when and how did political interference come into play, at least according to Knight?
So this is the heart of it, right? So I suggest our listeners, you know, read the story on the Publishers Weekly site, and it's all been written about in the national press too. So you can read about this probably in the New York Times as well. And you can click on the PW site in our story in the first line, you can click on and read Knight's 19-page letter for yourself. And I would urge you all to do so. But I'll point out a few things that caught my eye in the letter. Knight reveals that at the same time she and her staff began working on the pre-publication review in January, the book also caught the attention of NSC's legal department, NSC being the National Security Council, including its then deputy legal advisor, a man named Michael Ellis. Of course, Michael Ellis, weeks later, was promoted to senior national security advisor, a political appointee working in the White House. During the review, Knight was instructed to keep the NSC legal department in the loop, which in and of itself, Knight says, was an unprecedented action. But also curious, she says, she was forbidden to use email. She would literally have to do this all over the phone, including calling up and reading out her correspondence and observations over the phone. And you can guess why they probably did not want to leave a records trail, right? But Knight says that on April 28th, she told Bolton and the NSC legal office that the manuscript was clear. And at that point, another NSC legal advisor, Sue Bai, instructed Knight to just stand by and take no further action. For weeks, Knight says, she was not told, what the delay was. Though at one point, she points out in this letter, she said, oh, the delay was probably COVID-related. But on June 8th, she was taken by surprise when Ellis, who was now working at the White House as a political appointee, wrote a letter to Bolton's attorney saying the book still contained classified material, directly contradicting Knight and her team's findings. And here's where the story gets really interesting. Ellis, who had conducted his own second review of the manuscript, which Knight notes he was not properly trained to do, concluded that there was a bunch of classified information in here. But notably in the court documents, Knight points out that Ellis didn't actually receive his training on how to do a proper pre-publication review until after he had done the review that he was using to stop Bolton's book from moving forward. Knight then details an intense pressure campaign by the Trump White House to get Knight to reconsider her review and effectively sign off on the White House's, and I'll use her word here, flawed pre-publication review. She details how the review was flawed, too. She writes that what Ellis had actually done is gone back and done a mere classification review, not a pre-publication review. In other words, if there were things in the book that were also referenced in classified materials, well, Ellis flagged it as classified. But what he didn't do was check whether those items had since been cleared or were otherwise in the public domain and thus publishable. And rather than capitulate, Knight, over the course of a 4-hour meeting in the West Wing, she says, showed the White House how Ellis's conclusions in his pre-pub review were actually incorrect. You can imagine how that probably went over. Knight says that administration officials then continued to pressure her to admit that she and her team had missed something, or they made a mistake, or at least they wanted her to concede that the differing key determinations between her department's review and Ellis's review could be explained as a difference of opinion. To her credit, Knight responded that no, this was not a difference of opinion. And I'll quote her letter again here. Pull this up. It was a difference between a pre-publication review process conducted with the goal of producing a publishable manuscript, which she did, and a classification review process conducted with the goal of blocking publication. Further, over the course of 5 days and a total of 18 hours of meetings, Knight says, a rotating cast of Justice Department and White House attorneys, Knight says, tried to persuade her to sign a declaration that they could use in their case against Bolton. Again, she refused. And I'll quote her letter again here, too. In response to this pressure campaign, Knight asked the attorneys at the DOJ and from the White House how it could be appropriate that a designedly apolitical process has been commandeered by political appointees for a seemingly political purpose. She asked them to explain why they were so insistent on pursuing litigation rather than resolving the potential national security issues through engagement with Ambassador Bolton and her team. And I think that's a key question. Their job here is not to stop the book from being published. Their job was to make sure that no classified information got out. So you know, it's telling, I think, that that did not happen. So the attorney, she says, had no answer for her challenges aside from the recitation of the government's legal position that John Bolton had violated his contractual obligations by not actually waiting for the written clearance. And that's actually what the DOJ says in its lawsuit. The DOJ, in its motion to have the case decided on summary judgment against Bolton, they claim that it doesn't matter if the government acted in bad faith, good faith, bad faith, whatever. The point is he didn't get his written clearance and he was bound to wait for it. And here comes the big Trumpian conclusion. Guess what happened after Ellen Knight decided that she was not going to play ball?
So I'm guessing, Andrew, this has something to do with Trump's trademark phrase. So she was fired.
Yes, exactly right. More or less, anyway. You know, shortly after refusing to sign the declaration, Knight says her interactions with leadership at the NSC's legal department stopped until June 22nd. It wasn't a tweet. Instead, that day, she got an automated email informing her that, your detail's over in 60 days. This is a career official who's been doing this for some time with a lot of experience, and suddenly her detail is ending in 60 days. And she was out on her ear just like that.
So Ellen Knight also raised broader concerns about these types of reviews, which we've touched on briefly in previous podcasts.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've been concerned about the pre-publication review process for some time, which I've been following for a couple of years now through a lawsuit filed by the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University and the American Civil Liberties Union. That suit seeks more transparency about the government's pre-publication book review processes. I'll put it this way. John Bolton is one thing. You know, his experience is alarming. The fact that he went through this and his book was blocked by political appointees, that's an alarming experience. But he's a high profile guy, right? He has a microphone to get to the world. He's a veteran national security expert. Whatever you think of his views, this guy had an ability to fight back. But there are thousands, in fact, according to the ACLU and the Knight Institute, even millions of former government employees and contractors, even interns who are under gag orders from the various federal agencies they work for to submit their books or anything they write for review prior to publication. And the criteria for that review are completely arbitrary. We don't know what they are, in fact, right? It's a mystery. And these censors' decisions are, you know, overbroad many times. They just get letters back saying you can't use this with no reason for it. And there's no recourse for these authors. Once the agency declines to give you permission to publish it, even if you have a First Amendment right to get it out there, you're stuck in a bind. So this is not about Bolton's case for me as much as it is about the potential for the government to abuse the pre-publication review process to squelch important information that I think we as citizens are entitled to. And that's exactly what Ellen Knight says in her letter as well. And I'll quote her again here. As a career professional in the field of classified information management, Ms. Knight is very concerned about the politicization or even the perceived politicization of the pre-publication review process. This is what attorneys wrote in explaining why Ellen Knight was now putting her story out there on the record. Once authors start perceiving that manuscripts are being reviewed for political considerations, they will lose confidence in the integrity of the process, and they will find ways to publish or release their works without submitting them for review. And that, Knight says, the unchecked disclosure of sensitive information, the look for back doors to get it out there, that represents the most serious damage to our national security. I could not agree more. And, you know, and given what we've seen from the Trump administration, their litigiousness especially so far, the revelations in Knight's letter to me, they represent a five-alarm fire for authors, for the book industry, and for citizens. Now, the good news, of course, is that John Bolton's book did get published. It is out there because he decided to go on his own and undertake this core fight. But not everyone can fight like John Bolton can fight. And so I wanted to talk about this case today and this issue because authors, publishers, and indeed citizens need to be aware of this. And they need to stand up against this most insidious form of government censorship. The issue did not go away when Bolton's book came out. And if we do not get our arms around this issue now, and Trump wins another 4 years especially, it's chilling to think of what will happen to government transparency.
Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks for your analysis here on Beyond the Book. We will talk to you again next week.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on Beyond the Book, in storybooks and scholarly journals alike, narrative is the framework for how we share information, experiences, and insights. Talia Adele Stinson, a freelance journalist and project manager based in Philadelphia, tells me how she sees this ancient craft of storytelling in thoroughly 21st century terms as a form of data collection and data management.
Data is not just numeric, and it's not just qualitative. Either, right? I think it's literally the ingredients of what makes up your anatomy in every sense of the word, to your experiences, to your interactions, how you communicate in a boardroom, how you interact when you're at work, or even on a field if you play sports. So I really do think the story of who you are on all levels is essential to your brand in every sense of the word.
The science of storytelling. Next on Beyond the Book. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. The complete Beyond the Book podcast archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.